Welcome to Patients at Risk. This is a very special bonus episode that you won't want to miss. I'm your host, Dr. Rebecca Bernard, and today I am joined by Arizona State Representative Dr. Amish Shaw. Dr. Shaw is running for U.S. Congress. Dr. Shaw, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
I am from Chicago originally. I went to med school there, graduated in 2001, moved around the country. I got a master's in public health at Berkeley in 2003. I did my emergency medicine residency at Lincoln Hospital in the South Bronx, proud graduate of the Lincoln program. And then my first job out was as an academic physician faculty member at Mount Sinai on the Upper East Side. Still keep in touch with a lot of the people from back in New York. And while I was there, I also was working with the New York Jets and the National Football League. I had a little stint as an on-field physician, trying to make sure that every player in a real emergency got excellent care. So that led me to a sports med fellowship here in Arizona at the U of A. And after finishing, I fell in love with Arizona, decided to stay. I've been still practicing. I've been practicing at many hospitals across the state, but currently at Mayo Clinic. And a few years ago, decided to run for office because I thought the state of politics was less than inspiring. And the same thing was true about healthcare overall. And I thought we needed a voice for healthcare policy in the legislature. So I ran three times, I won three times, and now wanted to step up to a higher level.
Well, I'm just so impressed with you. We truly need physicians in these positions because you really understand what we as physicians are going through. And also really you can advocate directly for patients. It's always shocking to me how many legislators really understand very little about what happens in the practice of medicine, and yet they're making these really important decisions. So I'm so glad that you're there. And I know it's really hard, or it must be really hard. So why, other than just wanting to help, why did you decide to take this next step into politics?
Well, it was about community service. It's about public service overall. I was very fortunate in that throughout my childhood and my education and my career, I had so many people who were mentors and guided me to where I am now. And so I've had such a great career. I could not have done it without them. And it's part of paying it forward, right? Like, so if I think back, I remember my sixth and seventh grade and eighth grade teachers who particularly gave me a sense of confidence as a person. I remember my guidance counselor in high school who said, you know, you really ought to shoot a little bit higher with regard to your college applications. I remember a woman who is now still my career mentor in emergency medicine, Dr. Lisa Moreno-Wall, former president of the American Academy of Emergency Medicine, who I met during residency. It put me on a pathway to having such a great career within medicine. It's really important that each of us sort of steps up to help that next generation. You may remember the House of God, right? Like way back when they said, the famous line I remember from that was, if nobody takes care of us, how can we take care of other people? And I felt that healthcare workers need someone to look after them. And in this case, in the public policy arena.
I am so glad that you're doing it. And I know that in your 5 years of service in the Arizona House, you've really made a big impact on some different legislation that has helped physicians and patients. Can you tell our audience about some of your favorite issues that you've worked on?
I had more bills signed into law than any member of my party in over a decade. And among those are many healthcare bills. And as you said, very focused on healthcare workers and helping them to stay in practice, stay in their jobs, and continue to help other people, somewhat under the umbrella of preventing burnout. So let's start out with preventing violence against healthcare workers. That was one of the first bills that I brought forward in my freshman year. And it took a couple of years to get it passed, but we eventually did. And I thought that was really important because, especially from our nurses, they had complained about this again and again, that they were just really tired. And the statistics at OSHA will bear this out, that our industry really does suffer from this problem. So it was great to be able to do something about it. The next one was prior authorization reform, right? Which affects so many of us, not me in the emergency department, but so many others. And I remember a gentleman, he was a Republican, he was a constituent. He had a son who had muscular dystrophy. He came to me, sat down with me and said, "Do you know that I go to my doctor's office and to unburden them, I fill out a lot of those prior authorization forms for them because they are struggling under the weight of so many of those for my son." And I said, "This has got to change and we've got to do something about it." So with the Arizona Medical Association, we got a bill to significantly reform prior auth here in the state of Arizona. Number three, I want to talk about non-retaliation or whistleblowing. We have a statute and it was outdated. So I had a friend who was an emergency physician who was let go from an ER, meaning pushed off the schedule, because he appropriately referred a patient safety concern up the chain. And somebody said, "Well, he's kind of a troublemaker, so let's just not have him here anymore." Well, Arizona's law had said that a hospital couldn't fire you, but a third party could. And you know, the arrangements in medical employment these days, a lot of times involve a third party. So we updated that law to stop that kind of thing from happening again. And then fourth, we had an anti-burnout bill, which I'm really, really proud of. We're using a model that worked in another state, brought that here to Arizona, whereby the Arizona Medical Association and the Arizona Nurses Association could create a peer-to-peer network that was protected in law with confidentiality so that we could keep people working and people would be able to use their peers as a support network.
Those are some amazing bills. And, you know, my group, Physicians for Patient Protection, we're really concerned about bedside nurses. In fact, we think that a lot of people are leaving the bedside to go into nurse practitioner roles because they're hoping for a better situation. Of course, I don't think they realize that sometimes when they step into that role, they may be experiencing some of the same issues. So I'm so glad that you're working to protect our hardworking nurses. But let's talk a little bit about scope of practice. Many of our listeners are really concerned about protecting patient access to physician-led care, and many states are trying to push for independent practice of non-physicians. And you've worked on some of those issues, right?
Certainly, they'll come up during your time in the legislature, and you've got to be able to have some judiciousness. So I think that with every one of those bills, you ask yourself, is this justifiable? Is this safe for patients? In some cases, you can see an argument where there are some times where it will mean that you will just get things done better and faster and easier in healthcare. For example, the Arizona Medical Association this year is pushing to actually help expand the scope of practice of medical assistants so that they can communicate better. And this really does help unburden physicians. So we're actually kind of happy about that, right? But there are some other places where I really did not agree with the expansion of scope. So there was one in particular last year that came up that I was very concerned about. This had to do with prescribing by psychotherapists. Now, I think psychotherapists do an amazing job. They do something that I really gets at the heart of what patients' problems are. And I am frequently finding myself referring patients to psychotherapy from the emergency department because the levels of anxiety and depression that we've seen have really skyrocketed. However, the issue I've had with the idea of prescribing there is that those medications that you would be prescribing, psychoactive substances, those will affect your liver and your kidneys and the entire body and have interactions with all kinds of other medications. This is what we learn in medical school. This is what we learn how to deal with doing a medical-based history and physical exam, along with understanding patient context with judgment and experience, is kind of the heart of what we do. I think that without that level of training, I think the power of prescribing would be a bridge too far. And so I've worked with our psychiatrists on this.
I agree with you. Psychologists, psychotherapists, I have one working in my office and she's just so immensely valuable. But, you know, we do have to stay within our scope of what our training is. And I don't think, you know, taking a X hour additional course on prescribing is really a replacement for what medical school and residency gives you to really understand, especially with psychiatric medications, because so many of them do have many side effects and drug interactions. So our listeners are primarily physicians and mostly very interested in scope expansion and protecting patient access to physician-led care. I know that right now, you know, of course, everyone that's running for political office, it is very, very expensive, like crazy expensive. It seems like every single run here in my state of Florida, I was listening to some legislators talk about how expensive races are, even in small races. And you're running for United States Congress. So that's an expensive proposition, and that means that you have to raise funds to continue that. So I imagine that you are looking for support and help. So tell our audience, why should physicians consider donating to your campaign?
From my perspective, I see this as a value for all physicians. I've tried to be over the last few years in the Arizona House. I've been there for 5 years. I've tried to really be a champion for our profession, right? Espouse the highest values that we learn in medical school and to continue to try to transmit those to the next generation and tell the public at large a little bit about who we are and why what we do is important and et cetera. As you said, the reality is that it takes a decent amount of money to run for office. Now, with U.S. Congress, you're talking about $1.5 million over the 2-year cycle. It's just a lot of money. To put somebody in Congress is a national level project. So it takes everybody to chip in order to reach that kind of goal. We're very proud that as of December 31st, we have reached $1 million and we're at about 600,000 to go. So I need everybody to chip in and do their part. I hope that what they're getting out of that though is value. There are only 18 physicians in Congress, and I would like to see many, many more because it means the ability to actually get our policies passed, to actually have our voices heard in the halls of Congress. So I can't emphasize how important that is. I was actually not a guy who had been so involved in organized medicine over the first part of my career. And I was a member of ASEP and I was a member of AAM, but I didn't really think much of it. And now, having been in the political sphere for 7 years, having held office, I will tell you that I see things completely differently. I didn't realize that membership that you have, that those dollars you put into those PACs and those dollars that you give to candidates to help them win, they make a really, really big difference. If I'm going down there and I'm trying to be your representative, then I need all the resources I can get, meaning the lobbyists from the Arizona Medical Association and some of the subspecialty societies, because it's not just me. There's 89 other legislators down there, and it's a lot of work to get to them and explain to them, what are these bills? What's going on? That's why we need lobbyists, right? And lobbyists, you know, I used to have, quite frankly, a very, very negative perception of lobbyists. Then I got in there and I started to realize, oh, they're like lawyers. They basically will argue the pro and the con side of anything that's out there. And that's okay. Without lobbyists, you may not get to hear both sides of those arguments. And I think it is up to lawmakers to understand all those arguments and then make informed choices. So my thinking has changed a little bit on that. And yes, you need representation. Everybody has representation, from pharma companies to the insurance companies, to the nurses, to the doctors, to the pilots, to the farmers, to the barbers, everybody. And so that's how we get our voices actually heard in government. My message to everybody out there is choose to be part of the solution. Think about your colleagues. Think about the people who you work with. Think about your patients. If you care, then give. And when I say give, you know, it means give until it feels good. Because I think notoriously we have a lot of docs who, you know, have some ideas of how much money this actually takes. But I think that it doesn't always translate to being generous with our resources.
Well, you know, I think it's really hard for us physicians, and I'm starting to learn more about these things now that I'm more involved in the Florida Medical Association and I'm actually on our PAC board. So I'm involved in more of these conversations and I'm starting to understand more. It's not to say that I like it when I hear about these, you know, kind of political machinations and, you know, what they say, the way the sausage is made, as they say. You know, as physicians, I think we're used to seeing like, well, this is right and this is wrong. And here's medical ethics. And, you know, so it's hard for us to wrap our minds around things not going in that direction. But that was wrong. Why did that happen? And we have to kind of realize that politics is a whole different animal. But unless we're part of the process and unless we're helping support the people that can represent our viewpoint, we're really not even part of the conversation. So that's why I'm involved. And I'll just disclose that I have donated to your campaign, even though I'm not an Arizonan. I want to support physicians, whether they're Democrat or Republican. Fortunately, I'm a no party affiliation person, so it's pretty easy for me. But I really am all about supporting my colleagues, because I know that you're going to go in there with at least an understanding of what we are all going through. And I really, from what I know of you, Amish, you seem to have a lot of integrity and you're really fighting and walking the walk. So I'm going to encourage all of my colleagues listening that if you'd like to learn more, if you'd like to support Dr. Shah, you can donate to his campaign. And where do they do that?
The easiest way is to go to my website. It's Amish, A-M-I-S-H. Yes, it's spelled like those people who don't use electricity. For Arizona, amishforarizona.com. Or if you just Google Amish in Arizona, it'll come right up. And you'll see all the bio and my accomplishments and everything else. And take a look. And I would be honored to have your support. It really does take an entire nationwide effort to produce somebody to go to Congress. So I can only tell you in advance, thank you for your consideration.
Yeah, I'll put that link in the show notes. And then I just also want to make a plug for a fundraiser that you're going to be having at the Take Medicine Back meeting in California. That's going to be held in Palm Springs. The meeting is February the 10th on a Saturday. And I believe that your fundraiser will be the evening before February 9th. Is that correct?
Correct. There will be a virtual option and there will also be an in-person option.
Well, I'm actually going. I bought my plane tickets. I got my room. So anyone that's listening, it's not too late to register. Take Medicine Back. I'll have the link to that registration on the show notes and also information about Dr. Shah's fundraiser. So thank you so much for coming on the show. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience before I let you go?
No, I look forward to being at that Take Medicine Back conference in person. I appreciate all of you guys for taking care of patients. I'm honored for all the support I've received so far from the House of Medicine. So many of our subspecialty societies have given generously in terms of their PAC donations, and also the outpouring of support, but also the awards I've received from the American College of Emergency Physicians, gave me their National Trailblazer Award this year. The American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology gave me their Women's Health Champion Legislator of the Year Award in 2022 for protecting women's reproductive rights. And I've been also nominated or won awards from a lot of the medical subspecialties and folks here in the state of Arizona. And I'm just really grateful that so many of these folks have trusted me to represent them in politics. And I hope to continue to make you proud.
Well, it says a lot about your character and about your action. So I'm so pleased that you've joined me. And thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing you next month at the Take Medicine Back Summit.
Fantastic. See you then.